The Diary of Samuel Pepys, 1665. Edited by Robert Latham and William Matthews. Read by Leighton Pugh. 1665.
Preface for 1665. Events of 1665 are dominated by the outbreak of the Great Plague. Pepys first mentions it appearing on April the 30th. Plague had been part of London life since medieval times, but the plague of 1665 was the most virulent for 100 years, and Pepys is our main eyewitness of events. The plague was a bubonic infection caused by a bacillus carried by rat fleas. It was endemic in Asia and parts of Africa, and was spread through Europe by trading ships, which were infested with rats. The illness began with a high fever, followed by a swelling of the lymphatic glands, known as buboes. There was no cure or effective treatment in the 17th century, and it was highly infectious, leading to whole households succumbing and dying within a few days. The only remedy to stop its spreading was to isolate houses infected, which, however, led, inevitably, to the contamination of healthy family members. On February the 21st, Pepys mentions that his wife is going to the hothouse to bath herself. He treats it as a passing novelty, but Mistress Pepys appears to be ahead of her husband in linking cleanliness with health. Pepys makes no reference to bathing himself anywhere in the diary, and bathing was an exception for most people. Lack of personal hygiene was a major factor in the spread of the plague. 100,000 Londoners died in this year, between a quarter and a third of the population. Only in winter, when the fleas hibernated, did the epidemic cease. The court left London for the duration of the plague, and Pepys arranges for his wife to leave London and lodge at Woolwich with Mr. Sheldon, clerk of the check, which she does until November. Pepys himself, though spending as much time with his wife as possible, is obliged, because of his work, to stay in London. The Tangiers Committee continues to take up a lot of Pepys's time and charts the difficulties of establishing a British colony far overseas, the victualling, supply of men, and its governance. The committee meetings are often presented by Pepys as scenes of utter confusion and inefficiency, though Pepys's main concern seems to be the profit he can make for himself from brokering deals. This leads him dangerously and controversially into the area of prize money, when the assets of an enemy ship seized by the Navy were divided among the participants in the capture. Pepys is offered a share of the goods in a captured Dutch merchant ship, but the due process has not been observed, and he becomes aware that his share is illegal. His conscience troubles him until he is able to resolve the situation satisfactorily. Lord Sandwich, too, was involved in the prize money controversy, and in disgrace is sent abroad as ambassador to Spain. Pepys is pleased to be appointed joint treasurer of the Tangiers Committee, a position he held until 1680, as it meant a share in any profits. It also led to his being singled out from his fellow commissioners as a man to be noticed. The Duke of York expresses his high opinion of Pepys's abilities, and the Duke of Albemarle, formerly General Monk, calls Pepys the right hand of the Navy. To Pepys's own increasing satisfaction, he notes that the King himself seems more familiar with him, asking him frequently about Navy business. As a result, Pepys indulges in a flurry of spending, buying fashionable suits to reflect his growing confidence in himself and his position. Another prestigious rise for Pepys was his election as a member of the Royal Society on February the 15th. It introduced Pepys to the likes of Robert Boyle and Robert Hooke, the most distinguished scientists of the day. He also befriends a fellow diarist, John Evelyn, also a member of the Society, whom Pepys describes as a man so much above others. Pepys later served on the Council of the Royal Society and was twice its president. Rumours of a war with the Dutch simmer on through early 1665, and was officially proclaimed in the Exchange on March the 4th. The Duke of York was charged with leading the fleet against the Dutch. The first engagement takes place on June the 3rd, the Battle of Lowestoft, which results in an English victory. But the nature of the war was tit-for-tat action, and the Dutch fleet eluded Sandwich and the English fleet at Bergen later, escaping scot-free. On April the 3rd, Pepys mentions for the first time seeing Pretty Witty Nell perform at Drury Lane. This was the infamous Nell Gwynne, who had progressed from orange seller to actress and, ultimately, to the King's bed. Pepys succumbed to her charms on stage, and she is one of the great characters of the Restoration period. As late as October, Pepys is still determined to renew his annual vows to indulge less in pleasure. But it is a losing battle, for he records an increasing number of amorous encounters this year, some so sexual that he conceals them in a secret language of his own, a mixture of French, Spanish, Latin, and English. However, for his conscience's sake, he fines himself 12 pence for every illicit kiss he takes. Despite the plague, though, life carried on. Pepys was asked to assist in the arranged marriage of his patron's daughter, Lady Jemima, who had been Pepys's particular care when he first joined Sandwich's retinue in 1660. He was very close to her, and felt great joy in this marriage. Pepys records in July that despite the loss of many friends and colleagues in the plague, he is thoroughly happy with his life, feeling the greatest glut of content that ever I had. This content is often expressed in the joy of making music, and in this year Pepys composes his own song, Beauty Retire, from verses in the Siege of Rhodes. This song meant a great deal to Pepys, for he is prominently holding the manuscript in his hand in the definitive portrait of him by John Hales. On December the 31st, Pepys sums up this bittersweet year thus, "I have never lived so merrily, besides that I never got so much, as I have done this plague time."
January 1665. The 1st. Lord's Day. Lay long in bed, having been busy late last night. Then up and to my office, where upon ordering my accounts and papers with respect to my understanding my last year's gains and expense, which I find very great, as I have already set down yesterday. Now this day I am dividing my expense to see what my clothes and every particular hath stood me in, I mean all the branches of my expense. At noon, a good venison pasty and a turkey to ourselves, without anybody so much as invited by us, a thing unusual for so small a family of my condition, but we did it and were very merry. After dinner to my office again, where very late alone upon my accounts, but have not brought them to order yet, and very intricate I find it, notwithstanding my care all the year to keep things in as good method as any man can do. Past 11 o'clock, home to supper and to bed. The 2nd of January. Up, and it being a most fine hard frost, I walked a good way toward Whitehall, and then, being overtaken with Sir William Penn's coach, went into it, and with him thither and there did our usual business with the Duke. Thence, being forced to pay a great deal of money away in boxes, that is, basins at Whitehall, I to my barber's, Jervis's, and there had a little opportunity of speaking with my Jane alone, and did give her something, and of herself she did tell me a place where I might come to her on Sunday next, which I will not fail. But to see how modestly and harmlessly she brought it out was very pretty. Thence to the Swan, and there did sport a good while with Herbert's young kinswoman, without hurt, though, they being abroad, the old people. Then to the Hall, and there agreed with Mistress Martin, and to her lodgings, which she hath now taken to lie in Bow Street. Pitiful, poor things, yet she thinks them pretty. And so they are for her condition, I believe, good enough. Here I did ce que je voudrais avec her most freely, and it having cost me 2 shillings in wine and cake upon her, I away, sick of her impudence. And by coach to my Lord Brunker's by appointment, in the piazza in Covent Garden, where I occasioned much mirth with a ballet I brought with me, made from the seamen at sea to their ladies in town, saying Sir William Penn, Sir George Askew, and Sir John Lawson made them. Here a most noble French dinner and banquet, the best I have seen these many a day, and good discourse. Thence to my bookseller's, and at his binder's saw Hooke's book of the microscope, which is so pretty that I presently bespoke it, and away home to the office, where we met to do something, and then, though very late, by coach to Sir Philip Warwick's. But having company with him could not speak with him. So back again home, where, thinking to be merry, was vexed with my wife's having looked out a letter in Sir Philip Sidney about jealousy, for me to read, which she industriously and maliciously caused me to do. And the truth is, my conscience told me it was most proper for me, and therefore was touched at it, but took no notice of it, but read it out most frankly. But it stuck in my stomach, and moreover, I was vexed to have a dog brought to my house to lime our little bitch, which they make him do in all their sights, which, God forgive me, doth stir my jealousy again, though of itself the thing is a very immodest sight. However, to cards with my wife a good while, and then to bed. The 3rd of January. Up and by coach to Sir Philip Warwick's, the street being full of footballs, it being a great frost, and find him and Mr. Coventry walking in St. James's Park. I did my errand to him about the felling of the king's timber in the forests, and then to my Lord of Oxford, justice in Eyre, for his consent thereto, for want whereof my Lord Privy Seal stops the whole business. I found him in his lodgings, in but an ordinary furnished house and room where he was, but I find him to be a man of good, discreet replies. Thence to the coffee-house, where certain news that the Dutch have taken some of our colliers to the north, some say 4, some say 7. Thence to the change a while, and so home to dinner and to the office, where we sat late, and then I to write my letters. Then to Sir William Batten's, who is going out of town to Harwich tomorrow to set up a lighthouse there, which he hath lately got a patent from the king to set up, that will turn much to his profit. Here very merry, and so to my office again, where very late, and then home to supper and to bed. But sat up with my wife at cards till past 2 in the morning. The 4th of January. Lay long, then up and to my Lord of Oxford's, but his lordship was in bed at past 10 o'clock, and Lord help us, so rude a dirty family I never saw in my life. He sent me out word my business was not done, but should be against the afternoon. I thence to the coffee-house there, but little company, and so home to the change, where I hear of some more of our ships lost to the northward. So to Sir William Batten, but he was set out before I got thither. I sat long talking with my lady, and then home to dinner. Then came Mr. Moore to see me, and he and I to my Lord of Oxford's. But not finding him within, Mr. Moore and I to Love in a Tub, which is very merry, but only so by gesture, not wit at all, which, methinks, is beneath that house. So walked home, it being a very hard frost, and I find myself, as heretofore in cold weather, to begin to burn within and pimple and prick all over my body, my pores with cold being shut up. So home to supper and to cards, and to bed. The 5th of January. Up, it being very cold and a great snow and frost tonight. To the office, and there all the morning. At noon, dined at home, troubled at my wife's being simply angry with Jane, our cook-maid, a good servant, though perhaps hath faults and is cunning, and given her warning to be gone. So to the office again, where we sat late, and then I to my office, and there very late doing business. Home to supper and to the office again, and then late home to bed. The 6th of January. Lay long in bed, but most of it angry and scolding with my wife about her warning Jane, our cookmaid, to be gone, and upon that she desires to go abroad today to look a place. A very good maid she is, and fully, to my mind, being neat, only they say a little apt to scold, but I hear her not. To my office all the morning, busy, dined at home. To my office again, being pretty well reconciled to my wife, which I did desire to be, because she had designed much mirth today to end Christmas with, among her servants. At night, home, being Twelfth Night, and there chose my piece of cake, but went up to my vial, and then to bed, leaving my wife and people up at their sports, which they continued till morning, not coming to bed at all. The 7th of January. Up and to the office all the morning. At noon, dined alone, my wife and family, most of them, abed. Then to see my Lady Batten and sit with her a while, Sir William Batten being out of town, and then to my office, doing very much business very late. Then home to supper and to bed. The 8th of January. Lord's Day. Up betimes, and it being a very fine frosty day, I and my boy walked to Whitehall, and there to the chapel, where one Dr. Beaumont preached a good sermon, and afterward a brave anthem upon the 150th psalm, whereupon the word trumpet, very good music was made. So walked to my lady's, and there dined with her, my boy going home, where much pretty discourse, and after dinner walked to Westminster, and there to the house where Jane Welch had appointed me. But it being sermon time, they would not let me in, and said nobody was there to speak with me. I spent the whole afternoon walking into the church and abbey and up and down, but could not find her, and so in the evening took a coach and home, and there sat discoursing with my wife. And by and by, at supper, drinking some cold drink, I think it was, I was forced to go make water, and had very great pain after it. But was well by and by, and continued so, it being only, I think, from the drink or from my straining hard at stool to do more than my body would. So after prayers to bed. The 9th of January. Up and walked to Whitehall, it being still a brave frost, and I in perfect good health, blessed be God. In my way saw a woman that broke her thigh, in her heel slipping up upon the frosty street. To the Duke, and there we did our usual work. Here I saw the Royal Society bring their new book, wherein is nobly writ their charter and laws, and comes to be signed by the Duke as a fellow, and all the fellows' hands are to be entered there, and lie as a monument, and the King hath put his, with the word Founder. Thence I to Westminster to my barber's, and found occasion to see Jane, but in presence of her mistress, and so could not speak to her of her failing me yesterday. And then to the Swan, to Herbert's girl, and lost time a little with her. And so took coach unto my Lord Crewe's, and dined with him, who receives me with the greatest respect that could be, telling me that he doth much doubt of the success of this war with Holland, we going about it, he doubts, by the instigation of persons that do not enough apprehend the consequences of the danger of it, and therein I do think with him. Holmes was this day sent to the Tower, but I perceive it is made matter of jest only. But if the Dutch should be our masters, it may come to be of earnest to him, to be given over to them for a sacrifice, as Sir Walter Raleigh was. Thence to Whitehall to a Tangier committee, where I was accosted and most highly complimented by my Lord Bellasis, our new governor. Beyond my expectation or measure I could imagine he would have given any man, as if he were the only person of business that he intended to rely on, and desires my correspondence with him. This I was not only surprised at, but am well pleased with, and may make good use of it. Our patent is renewed, and he and my Lord Berkeley and Sir Thomas Ingram put in as commissioners. Here some business happened which may bring me some profit. Thence took coach, and calling my wife at her tailor's, she being come this afternoon to bring her mother some apples, neat's tongues, and brain, I home, and there at my office late with Sir William Warren, and had a great deal of good discourse and counsel from him, which I hope I shall take, being all for my good in my deportment in my office, yet with all honesty. He gone, I home to supper and to bed. The 10th of January. Lay long, it being still very cold, and then to the office, where till dinner, and then home, and by and by to the office, where we sat and were very late, and I writing letters till 12 at night, and then, after supper, to bed. the 11th of January. Up and very angry with my boy for lying long abed and forgetting his lute. To my office all the morning, at noon to the change and so home to dinner. After dinner to Gresham College, to my Lord Brunkard and Commissioner Pett, taking Mr. Castle with me, there to discourse over his draft of a ship he is to build for us, where I first find reason to apprehend Commissioner Pett to be a man of any ability extraordinary in anything, for I found he did turn and wind Castle like a chicken in his business, and that most pertinently and masterlike. And great pleasure it was to me to hear them discourse, I of late having studied something thereon, and my Lord Brunkard is a very able person also himself in this sort of business, as owning himself to be a master in the business of all lines and conical sections. Thence home, where very late at my office, doing business to my content, though God knows with what ado it was, that when I was out I could get myself to come home to my business, or when I was there, though late, could stay there from going abroad again. To supper and to bed. This evening, by a letter from Plymouth, I hear that two of our ships, the Leopard and another, in the Straits, are lost by running aground, and that three more had like to have been so, but got off, whereof Captain Allen won, and that a Dutch fleet are gone thither, which if they should meet with our lame ships, God knows what would become of them. This I reckon most sad news. God make us sensible of it. This night when I came home, I was much troubled to hear my poor canary bird, that I have kept these 3 or 4 years, is dead. The 12th of January. Up and to Whitehall about getting a privy seal for felling of the King's timber for the Navy, and to the Lord's House to speak with my Lord Privy Seal about it. And so to the change, where to my last night's ill news, I met Moore. Spoke with a Frenchman who was taken, but released by a Dutch man of war of 36 guns, with 7 more of the like or greater ships, off the North Foreland, by Margate, which is a strange attempt that they should come to our teeth. But the wind being easterly, the wind that should bring our force from Portsmouth will carry them away home. God preserve us against them, and pardon our making them in our discourse so contemptible an enemy. So home and to dinner, where Mr. Holyard with us dined. So to the office, and there late till 11 at night, and more, and then home to supper and to bed. The 13th of January. Up betimes and walked to my Lord Bellis's lodging in Lincoln's Inn Fields, and there he received and discoursed with me in the most respectful manner that could be, telling me what a character of my judgment and care and love to Tangier he had received of me, that he desired my advice and my constant correspondence, which he much valued, and in my courtship, in which, though I understand his design very well, and that it is only a piece of courtship, yet it is a comfort to me that I am become so considerable as to have him need to say that to me, which, if I did not do something in the world, would never have been. Here, well satisfied, I to Sir Philip Warwick, and there did some business with him. Thence to Jervis's, and there spent a little idle time with him, his wife, Jane, and a sweetheart of hers. So to the hall a while, and thence to the Exchange, where yesterday's news confirmed, though in a little different manner. But a couple of ships in the Straits we have lost, and the Dutch have been in Margate Road. Thence home to dinner, and so abroad, and alone to the King's House to a play, The Traitor, where unfortunately I met with Sir William Penn, so that I must be forced to confess it to my wife, which troubles me. Thence walked home, being ill-satisfied with the present actings of that house, and prefer the other house before this infinitely. To my Lady Batten's, where I find Peg Penn, the first time that ever I saw her to wear spots. Here very merry Sir William Batten being looked for tonight, but is not come from Harwich. So home to supper, and to bed. the 14th of January. Up and to Whitehall, where Long waited in the Duke's chamber for a committee intended for Tangier, but none met, and so I home and to the office, where we met a little, and then to the Change, where our late ill news confirmed, in loss of 2 ships in the Straits, but are now the Phoenix, and none such. Home to dinner, and thence with my wife to the King's House, there to see Volpone, a most excellent play, the best I think I ever saw, and well acted. So with Sir William Penn home in his coach, and then to the office, so home to supper and bed, resolving, by the grace of God, from this day to fall hard to my business again, after some, a week or fortnight's, neglect. The 15th of January. Lord's Day. Up, and after a little at my office to prepare a fresh draft of my vows for the next year, I to church, where a most insipid young coxcomb preached. Then home to dinner, and after dinner to read in Rushworth's Collections about the charge against the late Duke of Buckingham, in order to the fitting me to speak and understand the discourse anon before the King about the suffering the Turkey merchants to send out their fleet at this dangerous time, when we can neither spare them ships to go, nor men nor King's ships, to convoy them. At 4 o'clock with Sir William Penn in his coach to my Lord Chancellor's, where by and by Mr. Coventry, Sir William Penn, Sir John Lawson, Sir George Askew and myself were called in to the King, there being several of the Privy Council, and my Lord Chancellor lying at length upon a couch, of the gout, I suppose. And there Sir William Penn begun, and he had prepared heads in a paper, and spoke pretty well to purpose, but with so much leisure and gravity as was tiresome. Besides, the things he said was but very poor to a man in his trade, after a great consideration. But it was to purpose indeed to dissuade the King from letting these Turkey ships to go out, saying, in short, the King, having resolved to have 130 ships out by the spring, he must have above 20 of them merchantmen, towards which he in the whole river could find but 12 or 14, and of them the 5 ships taken up by these merchants were apart, and so could not be spared. That we should need 30,000 to man these 130 ships, and of them in service we have not above 16,000, so we shall need 14,000 more. That these ships will, with their convoys, carry above 2,000 men, and those the best men that could be got, it being the men used to the southward that are the best men for war, though those bred in the north among the colliers are good for labour. That it will not be safe for the merchants, nor honourable for the King, to expose these rich ships with his convoy of 6 ships to go, it not being enough to secure them against the Dutch, who, without doubt, will have a great fleet in the Straits. This Sir John Lawson enlarged upon. Sir George Askew, he chiefly spoke that the war and trade could not be supported together, and therefore that trade must stand still to give way to that. This Mr. Coventry seconded, and showed how the medium of the men the King hath, one year with another, employed in his navy since his coming, hath not been above 3,000 men, or at most 4,000 men, and now, having occasion of 30,000, the remaining 26,000 must be found out of the trade of the nation. He showed how the cloths sending by these merchants to Turkey are already bought and paid for to the workmen, and are as many as they would send these 12 months or more, so the poor do not suffer by their not going, but only the merchant, upon whose hands they lie dead, and so the inconvenience is the less. And yet for them, he propounded, either the King should, if his treasure would suffer it, buy them, and showed the loss would not be so great to him, or dispense with the act of navigation, and let them be carried out by strangers, and, ending, that he doubted not but when the merchants saw them there was no remedy, they would and could find ways of sending them abroad to their profit. All ended with a conviction, unless future discourse with the merchants should alter it, that it was not fit for them to go out, though the ships be loaded. The king in discourse did ask me two or three questions about my news of Alan's loss in the Straits, but I said nothing as to the business, nor am not much sorry for it, unless the king had spoke to me as he did to them. And then I could have said something to the purpose, I think. So we withdrew, and the merchants were called in. Staying without, my Lord Fitzharding came thither, and fell to discourse of Prince Rupert, and made nothing to say that his disease was the pox, and that he must be fluxed, telling the horrible degree of the disease upon him, with its breaking out on his head. But above all, I observed how he observed from the prince that courage is not what men take it to be, a contempt of death. For, says he, how chagrin the prince was the other day when he thought he should die, having no more mind to it than another man. But, says he, some men are more apt to think they shall escape than another man in fight, while another is doubtful he shall be hit. But when the first man is sure he shall die, as now the prince is, he is as much troubled and apprehensive of it as any man else. For, says he, since we told him that we believe he would overcome his disease, he is as merry, and swears, and laughs, and curses, and doth all the things of a man in health as ever he did in his life. Which, methought, was a most extraordinary saying, before a great many persons there of quality. So, by and by, with Sir William Penn home again, and after supper to the office to finish my vows, and so to bed. The 16th of January. Up and with Sir William Batten and Sir William Penn to Whitehall, where we did our business with the Duke. Thence I to Westminster Hall, and walked up and down. Among others, Ned Pickering met me, and tells me how active my Lord is at sea, and that my Lord Hinchingbroke is now at Rome, and by all reports a very noble and hopeful gentleman. Thence to Mr. Povey's, and there met Creed, and dined well after his old manner of plenty and curiosity. But I sat in pain to think whether he would begin with me again after dinner with his inquiry after my bill. But he did not, but fell into other discourse, at which I was glad, but was vexed this morning, meeting of Creed, at some by-questions that he demanded of me about some such thing, which made me fear he meant that very matter. But I perceive he did not. Thence to visit my Lady Sandwich, and so to a Tangier committee, where a great company of the new commissioners, lords, that in behalf of my Lord Bellis's, are very loud and busy, and call for Povey's accounts. But it was a most sorrowful thing to see how he answered to questions so little to the purpose, but to his own wrong. All the while, I, sensible how I am concerned in my bill of £100, and somewhat more, so great a trouble is fear, though in a case that at the worst will bear inquiry. My Lord Berkeley were very violent against Povey, but my Lord Ashley, I observe, is a most clear man in matters of accounts, and most ingeniously did discourse and explain all matters. We broke up, leaving the thing to a committee, of which I am one. Povey, Creed, and I stayed discoursing, I much troubled in mind, seemingly for that business, but indeed only on my own behalf, though I have no great reason for it, but so painful a thing is fear. So, after considering how to order business, Povey and I walked together as far as the New Exchange, and so parted, and I by coach home. To the office a while, then to supper and to bed. This afternoon Secretary Bennett read to the Duke of York his letters, which say that Alan hath met with the Dutch Smyrna fleet at Calais, and sunk one and taken three. How true, or what these ships are, time will show. But it is good news, and the news of our ships being lost is doubted at Calais and Malaga. God send it false. The 17th of January. Up and walked to Mr. Povey's by appointment, where I found him and Creed busy about fitting things for the committee, and thence we to my Lord Ashley's, where to see how simply, beyond all patience, Povey did again, by his many words and no understanding, confound himself and his business to his disgrace, and rendering everybody doubtful of his being either a fool or a knave, is very wonderful. We broke up all dissatisfied, and referred the business to a meeting of Mr. Sherwin and others to settle. But here it was mighty strange, methought, to find myself to sit here in committee with my hat on, while Mr. Sherwin stood bare as a clerk, with his hat off to his Lord Ashley and the rest. But I thank God I think myself never a whit the better man for all that. Thence with Creed to the Change and coffee-house, and so home where a brave dinner by having a brace of pheasants, and very merry about Povey's folly. So anon to the office, and there sitting very late, and then after a little time at Sir William Batten's, where I am mighty great, and could, if I thought it fit, continue so, I to my office again, and there very late, and so home to the sorting of some of my books, and so to bed. The weather becoming pretty warm, and I think and hope the frost will break. The 18th of January. Up and by to my booksellers, and they did give thorough direction for the new binding of a great many of my old books, to make my whole study of the same binding, within very few. Thence to my Lady Sandwiches, who sent for me this morning, dined with her, and it was to get a letter of hers conveyed by a safe hand to my lord's own hand at Portsmouth, which I did undertake. Here my lady did begin to talk of what she hath heard concerning Creed, of his being suspected to be a fanatic and a false fellow. I told her I thought he was as shrewd and cunning a man as any in England, and one that I would fear first should outwit me in everything, to which she readily concurred. Thence to Mr. Povey's by agreement, and there with Mr. Sherwin, Auditor Beale, and Creed and I hard at it very late about Mr. Povey's accounts. But such accounts I never did see or hope again to see in my days. At night late, they gone, I did get him to put out of this account, are sums that are in posse only yet, which he approved of when told, but would never have stayed it if I had been gone. Thence at 9 at night home, and so to supper, vexed and head-aching, and to bed. The 19th of January. Up, and it being yesterday and today a great thaw, it is not for a man to walk the streets, but took coach and to Mr. Povey's, and there meeting, all of us, again agreed upon an answer to the Lord's by and by, and then we did come to Exeter House, and there was a witness of most angry language against Mr. Povey from my Lord Peterborough, who is most furiously angry with him, because the other, as a fool, would needs say that that £26,000 was my Lord Peterborough's account, and that he had nothing to do with it. The Lords did find fault also with our answer, but I think verily my Lord Ashley would fain have the outside of an exchequer. But when we comes better to be examined. So home by coach with my Lord Berkeley, who by his discourse I find doth look upon Mr. Coventry as an enemy, but yet professes great justice and pains. At home, after dinner, to the office, and there sat all the afternoon and evening, and then home to supper and to bed. Memorandum. This day and yesterday, I think it is the change of the weather, I have a great deal of pain, but nothing like what I used to have. I can hardly keep myself loose, but on the contrary, am forced to drive away my pain. Here I am so sleepy, I cannot hold open my eyes, nor pen, and therefore must be forced to break off this day's passages more shortly than I would and should have done. This day was buried, but I could not be there, my cousin Percival Anger. And yesterday I received the news that Dr. Tom Pepys is dead at Impington, for which I am but little sorry, not only because he would have been troublesome to us, but a shame to his family and profession. He was such a coxcomb. The 20th of January. Up and to Westminster, where, having spoke with Sir Philip Warwick, I to Jervis's, and there do find them all in a great disorder about Jane, her mistress telling me secretly that she was sworn not to reveal anything, But she was undone. At last, for all her oath, she told me that she had made herself sure to a fellow that comes to their house that can only fiddle for his living, and did keep him company, and had plainly told her that she was sure to him, never to leave him for anybody else. Now they were this day contriving to get her presently to marry one Hayes that was there, and I did seem to persuade her to it, and at last got them to suffer me to advise privately, and by that means had her company, and I think she'll meet her next Sunday. But I do verily doubt she will be undone in marrying this fellow. But I did give her my advice, and so let her do her pleasure, so I have now and then her company. Thence to the Swan at noon, and there sent for a bit of meat and dined, and had my baiser of the fee of the house there, but nothing plus. So took coach and to my lady sandwiches, and so to my bookseller's, and there took home Hooke's book of Microscopy, a most excellent piece, and of which I am very proud. So home, and by again abroad with my wife about several businesses, and met at the New Exchange, and there, to our trouble, find our pretty doll is gone away to live, they say, with her father in the country. But I doubt something worse. So homeward, in my way, buying a hare and taking it home, which arose upon my discourse today with Mr. Batten in Westminster Hall, who showed me my mistake, that my hare's foot hath not the joint to it, and assures me he never had his colic since he carried it about him. And it is a strange thing how fancy works, for I no sooner almost handled his foot, but my belly begin to be loose and to break wind, and whereas I was in some pain yesterday and t'other day, and in fear of more today, I became very well, and so continue. At home to my office a while, and so to supper. Read, and to cards, and to bed. The 21st of January. At the office all the morning. Thence my Lord Brunkard carried me as far as Mr. Povey's, and there I light and dined, meeting Mr. Sherwin, Creed, etc., there upon his accounts. After dinner they parted, and Mr. Povey carried me to Somerset House, and there showed me the Queen Mother's chamber and closet, most beautiful places for furniture and pictures. And so down the great stone stairs to the garden, and tried the brave echo upon the stairs, which continues a voice so long as the singing three notes concords, one after another, they all three shall sound in consort together a good while most pleasantly. Thence to a Tangier committee at Whitehall, where I saw nothing ordered by judgment, but great heat and passion and faction now, in behalf of my Lord Bellasis, and to the reproach of my Lord Tiviot, and dislike, as it were, of former proceedings. So away with Mr. Povey, he carrying me homeward to Mark Lane in his coach. A simple fellow I now find him, to his utter shame, in his business of accounts, as none but a sorry fool would have discovered himself. And yet in little light sorry things, very cunning. Yet in the principal, the most ignorant man that I ever met with in so great trust as he is. To my office till past 12, and then home to supper and to bed, being now mighty well, and truly I cannot but impute it to my fresh hare's foot. Before I went to bed, I sat up till 2 o'clock in my chamber, reading of Mr. Hooke's Microscopical Observations, the most ingenious book that ever I read in my life. The 22nd of January. Lord's Day. Up, leaving my wife in bed, being sick of her months, and to church. Thence home, and in my wife's chamber dined very merry, discoursing, among other things, of a design I have come in my head this morning at church, of making a match between Mistress Betty Pickering and Mr. Hill, my friend, the merchant that loves music and comes to me a Sundays, a most ingenious and sweet-natured and highly accomplished person. I know not how their fortunes may agree, but their disposition and merits are much of a sort, and persons, though different, yet equally, I think, acceptable. After dinner, walked to Westminster, and after being at the Abbey, and heard a good anthem well sung there, I, as I had appointed, to the trumpet, They're expecting when Jane Welsh should come. But anon comes a maid of the house to tell me that her mistress and master would not let her go forth, not knowing of my being here, but to keep her from her sweetheart. So, being defeated, away by coach home, and there spent the evening prettily in discourse with my wife and Mercer, and so to supper, prayers, and to bed. The 23rd of January. Up and with Sir William Batten and Sir William Penn to Whitehall, but there, finding the Duke gone to his lodgings at St. James's for altogether, his Duchess being ready to lie in, we to him, and there did our usual business. And here I met the great news confirmed by the Duke's own relation, by a letter from Captain Allen, first, of our loss of two ships, the Phoenix and Nonesuch in the Bay of Gibraltar, then of his and his seven ships with him in the Bay of Calais or thereabouts, fight with the 34 Dutch Smyrna fleet, sinking the King Solomon, a ship worth £150,000 or more, some say £200,000, and another, and taking of three merchant ships. Two of our ships were disabled, by the Dutch unfortunately falling against their will against them. The Advice, Captain William Poole, and Antelope, Captain Clark. The Dutch men of war did little service. Captain Allen did receive many shots at distance before he would fire one gun, which he did not do till he came within pistol shot of his enemy. The Spaniards, on shore at Calais, did stand laughing at the Dutch, to see them run away and fly to the shore, 34 or thereabouts, against 8 Englishmen at most. I do purpose to get the whole relation, if I live, of Captain Allen himself. In our loss of the two ships in the Bay of Gibraltar, it is observable how the world doth comment upon the misfortune of Captain Moon of the Nonesuch, who did lose in the same manner the satisfaction, as a person that hath ill luck attending him, without considering that the whole fleet was ashore. Captain Allen led the way, and Captain Allen himself writes that all the masters of the fleet, old and young, were mistaken, and did carry their ships aground. But I think I heard the Duke say that Moon, being put into the Oxford, had in this conflict regained his credit by sinking one and taking another. Captain Seal of the Milford hath done his part very well in boarding the King Solomon, which held out half an hour after she was boarded, and his men kept her an hour after they did master her, and then she sunk and drowned about 17 of her men. Thence to Jervis's, my mind, God forgive me, running too much after Safi, but L, not being within, I away by coach to the change, and thence home to dinner, and finding Mistress Bagwell waiting at the office after dinner, away, L and I, to a cabaret, where L and I have été before, and there I had her company tout l'après-dîner, and had mon plein plaisir of L. But strange to see how a woman, notwithstanding her greatest pretences of love à son mari and religion, may be vaincue. Thence to the court of the Turkey Company at Sir Andrew Rickard's, to treat about carrying some men of ours to Tangier, and had there a very civil reception, though a denial of the thing as not practicable with them, and I think so too. So to my office a little, but being minded to make an end of my pleasure today, that I might follow my business, I did take coach and to Jervis's again, thinking to avoir rencontré Jane, mais elle n'était pas dedans. So I back again and to my office, where I did with great content faire a vow to mind my business and laissez aller les femmes for a month, and am with all my heart glad to find myself able to come to so good a resolution, that thereby I may follow my business, which, and my honour thereby, lies a-bleeding. So home, to supper, and to bed. The 24th of January. Up and by coach to Westminster Hall and the Parliament House, and there spoke with Mr. Coventry and others about business, And so back to the change, where no news more than that the Dutch have, by consent of all the provinces, voted no trade to be suffered for 18 months, but that they apply themselves wholly to the war. And they say it is very true, but very strange, for we used to believe they cannot support themselves without trade. Thence home to dinner, and then to the office, where all the afternoon and at night till very late. And then home to supper and bed, having a great cold, got on Sunday last by sitting too long with my head bare, for Mercer to comb me and wash my ears. The 25th of January. Up and busy all the morning, dined at home upon a hare pie, very good meat, and so to my office again, and in the afternoon by coach to attend the council at Whitehall, but come too late, so back with Mr. Gifford, a merchant, and he and I to the coffee-house, where I met Mr. Hill, and there he tells me that he is to be assistant to the secretary of the prize office, Sir Ellis Layton, which is to be held at Sir Richard Ford's, which, methinks, is but something low, but perhaps may bring him something considerable. But it makes me alter my opinion of his being so rich as to make a fortune for Mistress Pickering. Thence home and visited Sir John Menis, who continues ill but is something better. There he told me what a mad freaking fellow Sir Ellis Layton hath been and is, and once at Antwerp was really mad. Thence to my office late, my cold troubling me and having, by squeezing myself in a coach, hurt my testicles. But I hope I will cease its pain without swelling. So home, out of order, to supper and to bed. The 26th of January. Lay, being in some pain, but not much, with my last night's bruise. But up and to my office, where busy all the morning, the like after dinner till very late, then home to supper and to bed. My wife mightily troubled with the toothache, and my cold not being gone yet, but my bruise yesterday goes away again, and it chiefly occasioned, I think now, from the sudden change of the weather from a frost to a great rain on a sudden. The 27th of January. Called up by Mr. Creed to discourse about some Tangier business, and he gone, I made me ready and find Jane Welsh, Mr. Jervis's maid, come to tell me that she was gone from her master, and is resolved to stick to this sweetheart of hers, one Harbing, a very sorry little fellow, and poor, which I did in a word or two endeavour to dissuade her from. But being unwilling to keep her long at my house, I sent her away, and by followed her to the Exchange, and thence led her about down to the Three Cranes, and there took boat for the Falcon, and at a house going into the fields there, took up and sat an hour or two talking and discoursing, and faisons ce que je voudrais quant à la toucher, but she would not laisser me faire l'autre thing, though I did what I pouvais to have got her à me le laisser, but I did enough to faire grand plaisir à moi-même. Thence, having endeavoured to make her think of making herself happy by staying out her time with her master and other counsels, but she told me she could not do it, for it was her fortune to have this man, though she did believe it would be to her ruin, which is a strange stupid thing, to a fellow of no kind of worth in the world, and a beggar to boot. Thence away to boat again, and landed her at the Three Cranes again, and I to the bridge, and so home. And after shifting myself, being dirty, I to the Change and thence to Mr. Povey's, and there dined, and thence with him and Creed to my Lord Bellis's, and there debated a great while how to put things in order against his going. And so with my Lord in his coach to Whitehall, and with him to my Lord Duke of Albemarle, finding him at cards. After a few dull words or two, I away to Whitehall again, and there delivered a letter to the Duke of York about our navy business, and thence walked up and down in the gallery, talking with Mr. Slingsby, who is a very ingenious person, about the mint and coinage of money. Among other things, he argues that there being £700,000 coined in the rump time, and by all the treasurers of that time, it being their opinion that the rump money was in all payments, one with another, about a tenth part of all their money. Then, says he to my question, the nearest guess we can make is that the money passing up and down in business is £7 million. To another question of mine, he made me fully understand that the old law of prohibiting bullion to be exported is, and ever was, a folly and an injury rather than good, arguing thus, that if the exportations exceed importations, then the balance must be brought home in money, which, when our merchants know cannot be carried out again, they will forbear to bring home in money, but let it lie abroad for trade or keep in foreign banks. Or if our importations exceed our exportations, then to keep credit, the merchants will and must find ways of carrying out money by stealth, which is a most easy thing to do, and is everywhere done, and therefore the law against it signifies nothing in the world, besides that it is seen that where money is free, there is great plenty. Where it is restrained, as here, there is great want, as in Spain. These and many other fine discourses I had from him. Thence by coach home to see Sir John Minnis first, who is still sick, and I doubt worse than he seems to be. Mistress Turner here took me into her closet, and there did give me a glass of most pure water, and showed me her rock, which indeed is a very noble thing, but a very bauble. So away to my office, where late busy, and then home to supper and to bed. The 28th of January. Up and to my office, where all the morning, and then home to dinner, and after dinner abroad. Walked to Paul's Churchyard, but my books not bound, which vexed me. So home to my office again, where very late about business, and so home to supper and to bed, my cold continuing in a great degree upon me still. This day I receive a good sum of money due to me upon one score or another from Sir George Carteret, among others to clear all my matters about colours, wherein a month or two since I was so embarrassed, and, I thank God, I find myself to have got clear by that commodity £50 and something more, and earned it with dear pains and care, and issuing of my own money, and saved the king near £100 in it. The 29th of January, Lord's Day. Up and to my office, where all the morning putting papers to rights, which now grow upon my hand. At noon dined at home, all the afternoon at my business again. In the evening comes Mr. Andrews and Hill, and we up to my chamber, and there good music, though my great cold made it the less pleasing to me. Then Mr. Hill, the other, going away, and I to supper alone, my wife not appearing. Our discourse upon the particular vain humours of Mr. Povey, which are very extraordinary indeed. After supper I to Sir William Batten's, where I found him, Sir William Batten, Sir John Robinson, Sir Richard Ford and Captain Cock, and Mr. Fenn, Jr. Here a great deal of sorry disordered talk about the Trinity House men their being exempted from land service. But, Lord, to see how void of method and sense their discourse was, and in what heat, insomuch as Sir Richard Ford, who we judge some of us to be a little foxed, fell into very high terms with Sir William Batten, and then with Captain Cock, so that I see that no man is wise at all times. Thence home to prayers and to bed. The 30th of January. This is solemnly kept as a fast all over the city, but I kept my house, putting my closet to rights again, having lately put it out of order in removing my books and things in order to being made clean. At this all day, and at night to my office there to do some business. And being late at it, comes Mercer to me to tell me that my wife was in bed, and desired me to come home, for they hear, and have night after night lately heard, noises over their head upon the leads. Now it is strange to think how, knowing that I have a great sum of money in my house, this puts me into a most mighty affright, that for more than 2 hours I could not almost tell what to do or say, but feared this and that, and remembered that this evening I saw a woman and 2 men stand suspiciously in the entry in the dark. I, calling to them, they made me only this answer. The woman said that the men came to see her, but who she was I could not tell. The truth is, my house is mighty dangerous, having so many ways to be come to, and at my windows over the stairs, to see who goes up and down. But if I escape to-night, I will remedy it. God preserve us this night safe. So at almost 2 o'clock, I home to my house, and in great fear to bed, thinking every running of a mouse really a thief, and so to sleep, very brokenly all night long, and found all safe in the morning. The 31st of January. Up and with Sir William Batten to Westminster, where to speak at the House with my Lord Bellasis, and am cruelly vexed to see myself put upon business so uncertainly, about getting ships for Tangier being ordered, a servile thing, almost every day. So to the change, back by coach with Sir William Batten, and thence to the Crown, a tavern hard by, with Sir William Ryder and Cutler, where we alone, a very good dinner. Thence home to the office, and there all the afternoon late. The office being up, my wife sent for me, and what was it but to tell me how Jane carries herself, and I must put her away presently. But I did hear both sides, and find my wife much in fault. And the grounds of all the difference is my wife's fondness of Tom, to the being displeased with all the house beside to defend the boy, which vexes me, but I will cure it. Many high words between my wife and I, but the wench shall go. But I will take a course with the boy, for I fear I have spoilt him already. Thence to the office, to my accounts, and there, at once to ease my mind, I have made myself debtor to Mr. Povey for the £117 5s, got with so much joy the last month. But seeing that it is not like to be kept without some trouble and question, I do even discharge my mind of it. And so, if I come now to refund it, as I fear I shall now be ne'er a whit the poorer for it, though yet it is some trouble to me to be poorer by such a sum than I thought myself a month since. But, however, a quiet mind, and to be sure of my own, is worth all. The Lord be praised for what I have, which is this month come down to £1,257. I stayed up about my accounts till almost 2 in the morning. February 1665. The first. Lay long in bed, which made me, going by coach to St. James's by appointment to have attended the Duke of York and my Lord Bellasis, lose the hope of my getting something by the hire of a ship to carry men to Tangier. But, however, according to the order of the Duke this morning, I did go to the change, and there, after great pains, did light of a business with Mr. Gifford, and Hublin may bring me as much as I hoped for, which I have at large expressed in my stating the case of the King's Fisher, which is the ship that I have hired, and got the Duke of York's agreement this afternoon, after much pains and not eating a bit of bread till about 4 o'clock. Going home I put in to an ordinary by Temple Bar, and there with my boy Tom ate a pullet, and thence home to the office, being still angry with my wife for yesterday's foolery. After a good while at the office, I with the boy to the Sun behind the exchange, by agreement with Mr. Young the flagmaker, and there was met by Mr. Hill, Andrews, and Mr. Hublin, a pretty serious man. Here 2 very pretty savoury dishes and good discourse. After supper a song or 3 or 4, I having to that purpose carried Law's book, and staying here till 12 o'clock, got the watch to light me home, and in a continued discontent, to bed. After being in bed, my people came and say there is a great stink of burning, but no smoke. We called up Sir John Menaces and Sir William Batten's people and Griffin and the people at the madhouse, but nothing could be found to give occasion to it. At this trouble we were till past 3 o'clock, and then, the stink ceasing, I to sleep and my people to bed, and lay very long in the morning. The 2nd of February. Then up and to my office, where till noon, and then to the change, and at the coffee-house, alone, Gifford, Hublin, the master of the ship, and I read over and approved a charter party for carrying goods for Tangier, wherein I hope to get some money. Thence home, my head aching for want of rest and too much business. So to the office. At night comes Povey, and he and I to Mistress Bland's to discourse about my serving her, to help her to a good passage for Tangier. Here I heard her kinswoman sing 3 or 4 very fine songs, and in good manner, and then home and to supper. My cookmaid Jane and her mistress parted, and she went away this day. I vexed myself, but was resolved to have no more trouble, and so after supper to my office and then to bed. The 3rd of February. Up and walked with my boy, whom, because of my wife's making of him idle, I dare not leave at home. Walked first to Salisbury Court, there to excuse my not being at home at dinner to Mistress Turner, who I perceive is vexed because I do not serve her in something against the great feasting for her husband's reading, in helping her to some good penneths, but I care not. She was dressing herself by the fire in her chamber, and there took occasion to show me her leg, which indeed is the finest I ever saw, and she not a little proud of it. Thence to my Lord Bellis's, thence to Mr. Povey's, and so up and down at that end of the town about several businesses, it being a brave frosty day and good walking. So back again on foot to the change, in my way taking my books from binding from my booksellers. My bill for the rebinding of some old books, to make them suit with my study, cost me, besides other new books in the same bill, £3. But it will be very handsome. At the change did several businesses. And here I hear that news is come from Deal, that the same day my Lord Sandwich sailed thence with the fleet. That evening some Dutch men of war were seen on the backside of the Godwin, and by all conjecture must be seen by my Lord's fleet, which, if so, they must engage. Thence, being invited, to my Uncle White's, where the Whites all dined, and among the others, pretty Mistress Margaret, who indeed is a very pretty lady, and though by my vow it cost me 12 pence a kiss after the first, yet I did adventure upon a couple. So home, and among other letters find one from Jane that is newly gone, telling me how her mistress won't pay her a quarter's wages, and withal tells me how her mistress will have the boy sit 3 or 4 hours together in the dark, telling of stories, but speaks of nothing but only her indiscretion in undervaluing herself to do it. But I will remedy that, but am vexed she should get somebody to write so much, because of making it public. Then took coach and to visit my Lady Sandwich, where she discoursed largely to me her opinion of a match, if it could be thought fit by my lord, for my Lady Jemima with Sir George Carteret's eldest son. But I doubt he hath yet no settled estate in land. But I will inform myself and give her my opinion. Then Mistress Pickering, after private discourse ended, we going into the other room, did, at my lady's command, tell me the manner of a masquerade before the king and court the other day, where 6 women, my Lady Castlemaine and Duchess of Monmouth being 2 of them, and 6 men, the Duke of Monmouth and Lord Arran and Monsieur Blanfort being 3 of them, in vizards, but most rich and antique dresses, did dance admirably and most gloriously. God give us cause to continue that mirth. So home, and after a while at my office to supper and to bed. The 4th of February. Lay long in bed discoursing with my wife about her maids, which by James going away in discontent and against my opinion doth make some trouble between my wife and me. But those are but foolish troubles, and so not to be set to heart. Yet it doth disturb me mightily, those things. To my office, and there all the morning. At noon, being invited, I to the Sun behind the change to dinner to my Lord Bellis's, where a great deal of discourse with him, and some good. Among other, at table, he told us a very handsome passage of the King sending him his message about holding out the town of Newark, of which he was then governor for the King. This message he sent in a slug bullet, being writ in cipher, and wrapped up in lead, and swallowed. So the messenger came to my lord, and told him he had a message from the king, but it was yet in his belly. So they did give him some physic, and out it came. This was a month before the king's flying to the Scots, and therein he told him that at such a day, being the 3rd or 6th of May, he should hear of his being come to the Scots, being assured by the King of France that in coming to them, he should be used with all the liberty, honour, and safety that could be desired. And at the just day he did come to the Scots. He told us another odd passage, how the king, having newly put out Prince Rupert of his generalship upon some miscarriage at Bristol, and Sir Richard Willis of his governorship of Newark, at the entreaty of the gentry of the county, and put in my Lord Bellasis, the great officers of the king's army mutinied, and came in that manner with swords drawn into the market-place of the town where the king was, which the king hearing says, "I must to horse," and there himself personally, when everybody expected they would have been opposed, the king came and cried to the head of the mutineers, which was Prince Rupert, "Nephew, I command you to be gone." So the prince, in all his fury and discontent, withdrew, and his company scattered, which they say was the greatest piece of mutiny in the world. Thence, after dinner, home to my office, and in the evening was sent to by Jane that I would give her her wages. So I sent for my wife to my office and told her that rather than be talked on, I would give her all her wages for this quarter coming on, though 2 months is behind, which vexed my wife, and we begun to be angry, but I took myself up and sent her away, but was cruelly vexed in my mind that all my trouble in this world almost should arise from my disorders in my family, and the indiscretion of a wife that brings me nothing almost, besides a comely person, but only trouble and discontent. She gone, I late at my business, and then home to supper and to bed. The 5th of February, Lord's Day. Lay in bed most of the morning, then up and down to my chamber among my new books, which is now a pleasant sight to me, to see my whole study almost of one binding. So to dinner, and all the afternoon with Will Hewer at my office, endorsing of papers there, my business having got before me much of late. In the evening comes to see me Mr. Shepley, lately come out of the country, who goes away again tomorrow, a good and a very kind man to me. There came also Mr. Andrews and Hill, and we sang very pleasantly, and so, they being gone, I and my wife to supper, and to prayers, and bed. The 6th of February. Up and with Sir John Menis and Sir William Penn to St. James's, but the Duke is gone abroad. So to Whitehall to him, and there I spoke with him. And so to Westminster did a little business, and then home to the Change, where also I did some business, and went off and ended my contract with the Kingfisher, hired for Tangier, and I hope to get something by it. Thence home to dinner and visited Sir William Batten, who is sick again, worse than he was, and I am apt to think is very ill. So to my office, and among other things with Sir William Warren 4 hours or more, till very late, talking of one thing or another, and have concluded a firm league with him in all just ways to serve him and myself all I can, and I think he will be a most useful and thankful man to me. So home to supper and to bed. This being one of the coldest days, all say, they ever felt in England, and I this day under great apprehensions of getting an ague from my putting a suit on that hath lain by without airing a great while, and I pray God it do not do me hurt. The 7th of February. Up and to my office where busy all the morning, and at home, at dinner, it being Shrove Tuesday, had some very good fritters. All the afternoon and evening at the office, and at night home to supper and to bed. This day Sir William Batten, who hath been sick 4 or 5 days, is now very bad, so as that people begin to fear his death, and I at a loss whether it will be better for me to have him die, because he is a bad man, or live, for fear a worse should come. The 8th of February. Up and by coach to my Lord Peterborough's, where anon my Lord Ashley and Sir Thomas Ingram met, and Povey, about his accounts, who is one of the most unhappy accountants that ever I knew in all my life, and one that if I were clear in reference to my bill of £117, he should be hanged before I would ever have to do with him. And as he understands nothing of this business himself, so he hath not one about him that doth. Here late, till I was weary, having business elsewhere, and thence home by coach, and after dinner did several businesses, and very late at my office, and so home to supper and to bed. The 9th of February. Up and to my office, where all the morning very busy. At noon, home to dinner, and then to my office again, where Sir William Petty came, among other things, to tell me that Mr. Barlow is dead. For which, God knows my heart, I could be as sorry as is possible for one to be for a stranger, by whose death he gets £100 per annum, he being a very honest man. But after having considered that when I come to consider the providence of God, by this means unexpectedly to give me £100 a year more in my estate, I have cause to bless God, and do it from the bottom of my heart. So home late at night after 12 o'clock, and so to bed. The 10th of February. Up and abroad to Paul's Churchyard, there to see the last of my books new bound, among others my Court of King James and The Rise and Fall of the Family of the Stuarts, and much pleased I am now with my study, it being, methinks, a beautiful sight. Thence, in Mr. Gray's coach, who took me up, to Westminster, where I heard that yesterday the King met the Houses to pass the great bill for the £2.5 million. After doing a little business, I home, where Mr. Moore dined with me, and evened our reckonings on my Lord Sandwich's bond to me for principal and interest. So that now, on both, there is remaining due to me £257.7 and no pence, and I bless God that it is no more. So all the afternoon at my office and late home to supper, prayers and to bed. The 11th of February. Up and to my office, where all the morning, at noon to the change by coach with my Lord Brunkard, and thence, after doing much business, home to dinner, and so to my office all the afternoon till past 12 at night. Very busy. So home to bed. The 12th of February. Lord's Day. Up and to church to St. Lawrence to hear Dr. Wilkins, the great scholar, for curiosity, I having never heard him, but was not satisfied with him at all. Only a gentleman sat in the pew I by chance sat in, that sang most excellently, and afterward I found by his face that he hath been a Paul scholar, but know not his name, and I was also well pleased with the church, it being a very fine church. So home to dinner, and then to my office all the afternoon, doing of business, and in the evening comes Mr. Hill, but no Andrews, and we spent the evening very finely, singing, supping, and discoursing. Then to prayers and to bed. The 13th of February. Up and to St. James's, did our usual business before the Duke, thence I to Westminster and by water, taking Mr. Stapley, the rope-maker, by the way, to his rope-ground, and to Limehouse, there to see the manner of stoves, and did excellently inform myself therein. And coming home did go on board Sir William Petty's Experiment, which is a brave, roomy vessel, and I hope may do well. So went on shore to a Dutch house to drink some mum, and there light upon some Dutchmen, with whom we had good discourse touching stoving and making of cables. But to see how despicably they speak of us for our using so many hands more to do anything than they do, they closing a cable with 20 that we use 60 men upon. Thence home and eat something, and then to my office where very late, and then to supper and to bed. Captain Stokes, it seems, is at last dead at Portsmouth. The 14th of February, St. Valentine. This morning comes betimes Dick Penn to be my wife's valentine, and came to our bedside. By the same token, I had him brought to my side, thinking to have made him kiss me, but he perceived me, and would not. So went to his valentine, a notable stout witty boy. I, up about business, and opening the door, there was Bagwell's wife, with whom I talked afterwards, and she had the confidence to say she came with a hope to be time enough to be my valentine, and so indeed she did. But my oath preserved me from losing any time with her. And so I and my boy abroad by coach to Westminster, where did two or three businesses, and then home to the change, and did much business there. My Lord Sandwich is, it seems, with his fleet at Aldborough Bay. So home to dinner, and then to the office, where till 12 almost at night, and then home to supper and to bed.